So Zvi told me that I'm supposed to do this roundtable, so I am here following his instructions. And this roundtable is supposed to talk about how to improve the landscape between experiment and theory by figuring out whether there are better ways to collaborate. And what I think we're going to do is I wrote just before Christmas a set of questions which were sort of pretty random because Z also told me to write a set of questions. I tried to think of, first of all, some things that would make things go better. And then I realized that the principal thing is really an educational thing. It has not so much to do with what we're doing. So I will say a few things about these questions. Then I told the people in the panel they have about 7 minutes, roughly, which should be probably five, to say something. And then we should discuss, and in fact, we should interact with you in any which way. Okay. Unfortunately, we have no round table to defend ourselves so that we could be behind it. So comment on whatever we say. First, so my set of questions were the following. Okay. What do you think could help stimulate a more engaging and long-term partnership between experimentalists and theorists? And the panels were asked to suggest 2 to 3 ideas. Okay, this was my minimum question. Second, and I think this is one that in fact has been addressed by this workshop. What are, in your opinion, the crucial problems of interface of experiment and theory, which need a concerted joint effort in the next 3 years or 5 years? And again, I think that the talk that we just had from David gave you a good sense of actually clear problems and people attacking them, but there may be others and it might be interesting. Then a lot of my questions were really had to do more with educations, okay? And I began with sort of a mild questions. Are there seminars, not colloquium, seminars, okay? So really working things. In your institution, they are attended on a regular basis by experimentalists and theorists, okay? And in most places, there is sort of a division of labor, you know, and the two shall never meet, okay? So colloquium, sometimes they do, okay? And if your answer is yes, tell me why so. And if your answer is no, tell me why you're not doing something about it. The fourth thing is I wanted the panelists to describe steps that they themselves or others that they know have taken to make sure that their students feel comfortable working with either an experimentalist or a theorist. Okay? Because again, that's really part of the crux. Theorist students, I mean, some of them don't even know about experiment, but the ones that know about experiment, however, do not really talk to experimentalists very much, and vice versa. And finally, I had a question about labs. Large international labs are ideal places to really foster a communication between experimentalists and theorists. It would be great to have really year-long, 6-month-long courses that will really merge theory and experiment. What we do is have lots of wonderful summer schools, but if you look at the summer schools, again, they're theory talks, they're experimental talks, but they're not talks that try to really address both things together. So do they have any ideas? Do they see some things like that? And finally, there was a sort of specific question of whether having a focus workshop on LHC physics since LHC took forever since it had another name before. So people have been having focus collider workshop for a long time. But could you imagine that having a 1-year really focused workshop in Geneva in 2006 or something, would that make any sense or not? And could the workshop here be actually a good way to sort of launch something like that? So that's one of my questions. They're clearly just some possible questions. So what I think I'll start with, let's see. Well, unfortunately, Keith is not here because he certainly would be the oldest, but we'll start with Ian.
Well, Well, in the usual manner, since I thought the right way to respond to this the way a politician responds, I don't like the question, I won't answer that, I'll answer another one. So I only answer partly. So let me first deal with the long-term partnership business. Well, I don't think it's so bad. I mean, there seems to be a premise that there is no partnership and nothing, it's all broken. I don't think it's so bad. If you look at the physics, QCD, PDS, I think there are long-standing collaborations between experimenters. Ideas. Look at people working here and so on. So I think it is true that there are. Having said that, I think that bifurcation between the theorists and the experimenters is more of a US problem than it is a European problem. David said this 10 minutes or so. Theorists who do useful and tough calculations tend to get tenured jobs at European universities, not at US. I think that's a problem. I don't know how to fix it. Talk to the university administration. And I also invite you to think of the question of if the Herwig Plus Plus project had been proposed in the US, would it have been funded? And it was funded by the PPAC in Britain. Okay. So having said that, the theorists can help to make the partnership better by sinking the myth that the LHC will give the first interesting data in a generation. I've seen that quote in lots of places. It usually comes in letters of recommendation. You know, this guy's superbly poised to exploit the first new physics we'll have in a generation. I've seen it many times. It's crap, and people keep propagating it. Okay, there's lots of interesting data now. You don't need to wait for the LHC. There's a problem that Hadron Canary phenomenology is harder than the plus-minus. And so the beyond the standard model community, which typically is not this community here, tends to write a new theory and discuss how you can measure it at a linear collider, rather than how you can measure it at the Tevatron or the LHC. It's a problem. And you can all fix this when you get these papers to be refereed.
You just have to teach the audience about.
You should also try to convince your theoretical students and postdocs to think about whether their theory is falsifiable on what timescale. You're going to have a problem convincing experimenters that they should be interested in your latest idea when it can only be tested at a 5 TeV linear collider. As far as experimenters are concerned, publish data promptly and publish corrected data. It's very interesting to see an experimental paper where there's some data shown, which is the result of what comes out of the experiment, and there's a comparison with some theory simulated through the detector simulation. It's sort of interesting, but it's useless to a theorist, because they can't rerun your simulation. A particular one, since I've got the floor, it's time for the mean bias and underlying event data from the territory. Crucial problems on the interface of experiment and theory. I'd like a Hadron Monte Carlo as good as what we've got from Lick, what we had at the end of Lick. Whether I'll get it, I don't know, but that's what I mean. Experimenters have very little experience with next to leading order Monte Carlos, and it's going to be important to use them once we have data. So you guys who are writing these next to leading order Monte Carlos, be patient when experimenters come with stupid questions like, what do I do with this event with a weight of minus 10 million? There will be crazy things seen at the LHC, and the beyond the standard model builders are very unwilling to do the work needed to add their model to a Monte Carlo so it can either be compared with data or used in a simulation. It's much easier now than it used to be, but work needs to be done. I mean, if you're an experimenter, you don't want to look at theory paper, try to read numbers off plots. You want to be able to generate and simulate events. And the models for the underlying events need more knobs. Any knobs in some cases, but more knobs in all cases. Now, the seminars. Yes, we do have seminars in Berkeley that are attended both by theorists and experimenters. However, when the speakers are theorists, the attendance is good. When it's an experimenter, very few theorists show. And the reason I'm most often given by the theorists is I'm not working on anything related to that. That might be a good reason for a string theorist, maybe, but it's not such a good reason for somebody who's working on neutrinos but refuses to attend a talk on precision measurements at LEP, for example. When I was head of the theory group, I used to beat the students up on a regular basis if they didn't attend the seminars. And that worked. I mean, they did attend the seminars. Of course, they watched that I was there as well. Well, it's up to you guys who have students to tell them that they have to go to the get them into the habit and lead by example. Okay, the working conditions with the experimenters. Well, I'm in a kind of an odd position here, because I'm neither a theorist nor an experimenter. So let me answer the question. So experimental students are often very frightened of approaching theorists. You know, nobody wants to go and ask David something because they're terrified of him. He's got this up there on the pedestal. You know, nobody wants to invite. So it's a natural reaction, particularly for experimental students from smaller institutes. So I get many Atlas people coming up to me and asking questions that they could really ask of someone at their own institute. And, you know, why are they asking me? Well, apparently not. They ought to be, but apparently not. So we try to deal with this by inviting outside theorists to appear regularly at Atlas meetings. And the main function isn't so they can give a talk, but so the people in the audience can figure out who these people are and later can go and ask them questions. And I try to introduce these people to theorists whenever it's necessary. When the reverse is true, when theory students come to ask me an experimental question, if there's a postdoc or a student in Berkeley working on it, I tell them to go and talk to that person, rather than giving them an answer. I think that's the right thing to do. You can't always do that. The problem is the theory students usually want the PowerPoint answer and not the backup note. They ought to have the backup note, but they only want the PowerPoint answer. Now, about the courses at the laboratories, I don't think this works for the very simple, purely practical reason. Theory students want to be with their advisors, and their advisors are teaching at universities and not resident at the laboratory. So it's only going to work when advisors are on sabbatical and take their students with them. The reverse for experimenters, it might work, but it doesn't help because they're not both in the same place. However, even for experimenters, you need a stick and a carrot. And the carrot has to be they should get credit, college credit, for the courses that are given. So I think that intense short courses in the summer are a better idea, the sort of thing that's interesting from a purely practical point of view. And about the workshops, well, the workshops that bring theorists together, like this one, are a very important thing, because there are lots of people stuck in one university. But you shouldn't expect experimenters to show up to workshops for extended periods of time, particularly in 2006, when there'll be a panic to commission experiments. And the best pattern, I think, is the pattern of ongoing work interspersed with intensive meetings, the sort of thing that the lazy workshops do rather well. So you have a couple of, a week maybe, where everybody comes together, people go away, they continue to work on stuff, but they come back. And that also provides a forum for the younger people who've done some work to present it in the meeting and get some recognition for it. For it. Okay.
Thank you. Joe?
Let me actually follow up on that last point while it's fresh in my mind. I think this idea of having year-long working workshops is a good idea, but it's crucially dependent on how you organize it. And I agree with what Ian was just saying, that we had these physics that run two workshops in 1998 at Fermilab, Susie Higgs workshop and the B physics workshop, that were full year-long workshops. And they worked very well, and they were in this model where there were, most of the time there's nothing happening, but people know that there are these two-day meetings coming up every once in a while, and everybody has to iterate on what it is they're supposed to be doing for those meetings. So that was one of the things that seemed like a workable model for both the theory and the experiment side of this. Another thing that was important, which Ian also mentioned, was that it was a way for young experimenters to actually, first of all, get some responsibility by being conveners of working groups and subgroups, and shine in some kind of leadership position, which was a big motivator for people. And also a chance for young experimentalists to write papers with theorists, and again, to have something that, you know, that makes them stand out in these big collaborations. So that, I think, was a good model. Another thing that was important was that you had to have a critical mass of senior experimentalists involved, at least at the level of validating that this was a worthwhile activity, so that the younger experimentalists felt, first of all, validated and felt some that this was an okay thing for them to be spending their time on. And I think if you don't have that, you also won't get participation in these kinds of intensive workshops. And then the last thing that was important, I think, from the theory end, was that if you want to get theorists to come and spend long periods of time at Fermilab or any place else, you have to have money so you can buy them out of teaching. We had Keith started what we call Frontier Fellowships, where we actually had a big increase in our visitor budget to actually spend real money so that people could come for 1, 2, 3 months at a time. And I think if you don't have that, you can't expect people to come for long periods of time. So I think it's a very good idea to have these real serious long-term workshops, but you have to do them in the right place and you have to organize them in the right way. Let me make a couple more observations that are Fermilab oriented. Touch on some of your questions. One was this idea of teaching. This is a subject that has come up many times addressed to the Fermilab theory group. We have a big theory group. There's all these experimental students at Fermilab. Why don't we teach courses? And it's never happened. I don't even think it's ever come close to happening. And it's been resisted, and it's been resisted for, I think, two main reasons. One is, we're at a lab. If we wanted to teach, we can go to university. In fact, some of us do go to universities and teach. So this is sort of a practical problem. But the other problem was that, experimental students come to Fermilab to work on the experiments, and they're supposed to get educated at their home universities. And if we started to operate a service where send your student to Fermilab and we will educate them for you, that is in some sense taking the pressure off of the universities to teach students particle theory. And I think because of this problem that Ian already alluded to, that in the U.S. there is not a sufficiently high emphasis on traditional particle physics in many levels, that's kind of a bad idea. If it's concentrating more of particle physics in the labs and less distributed out at the university. So I think there is a problem with this idea of teaching courses at labs. Let me mention a couple other things. Another point about Fermilab. Fermilab is a big lab. It's the main U.S. lab. We have a big theory group. But unlike the rest of the lab, which is really oriented as a user facility, the theory group is a homegrown theory group. And we don't really have, and it was never organized as sort of a user theory facility. And I think with the advent of the LHC, we should actually think about whether we want something like that in the U.S. And in fact, Marcela Carena, who is here, is actually, as part of the long-range planning for Fermilab, is proposing that we should have an LHC theory center at Fermilab, which would be like the Fermilab Astro Theory Group, would be completely distinct from the homegrown theory group, and would in fact be a theory user facility at Fermilab oriented towards LHC physics. And that's not something for me to decide, but I think it's something for the rest of the U.S. theory community to think about if they want something like that. If they want it, how would they want it organized? Would they want it at Fermilab, or would they want it someplace else? I think this is good timing to think about how do you want to organize the theory activities in the U.S. to get the most out of the LHC physics. So I would encourage people to talk to Marcela, who are interested in this idea, and give us some input on that. So one of them.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, coming from Europe, I think I can confirm that the problem of missing collaboration between theorists and experimentalists may not be so big there, because from my personal point of view, I have very good experience in that, not only for myself, but also now for my students, who almost everybody of them has direct contact with theorists, either in-house or also theory groups at the big labs, for instance. So the problem, I think, is not really as big there. Now, I think we should also distinguish between theoretical theorists and those who do phenomenology. Because also I have in my house theoretical theorists, and I don't even know what they are doing, and it's very difficult to talk to them, right? I should. and that is much more difficult, but I think we talk about our community here, which is sitting. Now, what is a good recipe to bring together even more theorists and experimentalists in our field? I think if theorists are convinced that they have the most success in this field, if they predict quantifiable effects, then they will be forced to talk to experimentalists, and vice versa, of course. So I think the development of common tools, as we are facing now also the need for the LHC running period, like talking about JET algorithms, which can be reliably calculated maybe next to leading order, and can be used experimentally, efficiency cuts and all these things. I think there's a need. You cannot be successful in either way without talking to each other. As Ian said already, at LHC and in the big collaborations, and I have been a member of CMS and I'm now in ATLA, so I know both of them. It is always a good, and both do it, they invite theorists to their meetings. And that is a good experience, I think, and not only for these few people who talk there, but also the young people in the audience, they get used to approaching theorists directly. Right? Now, as to what do we do in the institute, in the Max Planck Institute, in my case, of course, we have the physics colloquium that is attended usually by both COs and experimentalists, also theoretical COs. But of course, you see, as always, if there's an experimental talk having a title which talks about, I don't know, drift chambers and calorimeters, you find no COs in the audience.
I think that is
universal. However, I figured that it's most important for the young people. The young people are not so prejudiced. I mean, they are much easier in talking to each other, I found, than many of the older ones. So what we introduced in the Max Planck Institute is several annual happenings, which are always done with all the scientists of the institute, like an annual project review, where we in 15 minutes talks, we present all the projects which are going on in the institute, both theoretical and experimental ones. And almost everybody comes there, and we mix the talks, so we don't have a theory block and an experimental block, because then you have an exchange in audience. It's just one after the other, completely mixed. We have introduced the same thing, especially for the young people, meaning those who are not on permanent positions, postdocs, and PhD students. We call this the YAPI seminar. That's the Young Astroparticle and Particle Physics Seminar. And we have insisted that the older ones should not go there. It's just for the young ones. And this created big enthusiasm, and I saw that that experimentalists and theorists, all the theoretical theorists and bloody experimentalists, go there and enjoy listening to talking to each other in a very informal way. I have never been there. I don't know how they actually do it. But they are very satisfied with that. And I think that is quite a good community. And we have also once a year, we have an outside seminar where we take all the young people of our institute to, we have a castle. You know, Max Planck Society has a castle, which you know, in the Alps, a very nice place. There is internet now, but there's not much to do other than going to the talks. And this is also quite a big success, and we follow the same rules that's a complete mixture of talks and not really put together a few theorists and experimentalists. So that works quite nicely. And I see my young people really talking to each other, and they partly work together. Even PhD students from theory and experiment are used to talk to each other and help them out. And they sit in the same offices sometimes. I started not to distribute them, the theorists up there in the third floor and the experimentalists in the basement. They are just mixed in rooms. You find theoretical and experimental PhD students in one room. That works quite nicely. So I think for the young generation, at least how I can see that, that is working quite nicely, at least in our case. Now, also at university, I don't give too much lectures since I'm doing mostly management, but when I give lectures, 50% of my lectures I try to do together with a theorist. So one lecture, two professors, one theorist, one experimentalist, and all of that seems to be well received by the students and makes them think, getting used to the idea that you have to do things together. Of course, I see that the old ones are separated, right? There's one experimentalist not knowing anything about theory and vice versa, but maybe they will be much better in the future. Summer schools are very nice. I'm also one of the organizers of a summer school in Germany, which we do in a living monastery, which is very nice for students because it's a special mood there. Also, nothing much more to do than thinking about physics and working on that. And also there, experimentalists and theorists, we force them to listen to the same lectures, and they also have they have a calculus, they do calculus in the afternoon, and they give talks to each other, explaining their field of subject to all the other students, and they are always mixed. The question whether similar things happen at the big labs, of course, the summer student lectures at CERN are quite a success, usually. Now, the talks are not mixed, usually. It's either theorists or an experimentalist or a computer scientist who gives talks. But I think it's always the theoretical and the experimental students who are listening to that, and also there, I think that is quite a good thing, at least for these few weeks in summer. Having longer terms of lecturing and courses at these big labs, that has been said by you also, I don't think that will be a big success, because most people will not be able to go there during a semester, during terms, and they don't get credit for it at the home university. So that it should be a completely new system. One has to think about it. It's not fairly obvious to me that this will work. And finally, having very extended workshops like this one, but for a year, I must say, at least for me, it would be difficult to attend things for several months or a year even. And I'm not sure whether this will really be as good. We all have access to internet. We have media conferences and stuff like that. I think it's very good to work together on certain subjects without having to be for a longer period to meet at the same places. But for a couple of weeks, I think that is quite a good thing.
Well, when I thought about this problem, I sort of viewed it also as the way Ian did, as to whether there's a real problem or not. Where I live, there's a big nuclear community of people, and they're very well organized, it seems to me. They have their own Institute for Nuclear Theory. They have workshops all the time. They're very focused. They work together, etc. But it's not the environment that I view as particle physics, in that I think particle physics, we're able to jump around as theorists and work on lots of different things and not be obliged to be part of a working group that is responsible for producing something for someone else to use, etc. So I start off a little bit negative about having too much organization in the particle theory community. On the other hand, I think things have swung to a point where the U.S. is quite weak in phenomenology, partly because there's not much data, not too many experiments. If there were more data and more experiments, people would probably be drawn to it and there wouldn't be any real problem. So I do wind up thinking that there is some need for organization towards building the U.S. effort in what I would call particle physics phenomenology or real-world physics, or whatever you want to call it. And I wanted to propose a couple of specific ideas. Some of them overlap with the comments previously made because we were asked to be specific. For the closer partnership, I think that the LHC Physics Analysis Centers, we heard about the possibility of one being at Fermilab. At Brookhaven, we've discussed that. At LBL, I think there's discussion about that, where Fermilab would be the analysis center for CMS, and some combination of Brookhaven, LBL would likely be a ATLAS type of analysis center. It seems to me that those could have a theory component without having a separate theory center for LHC physics. Some of the people might actually be part of those collaborations. Already people like Ian are taking a leading role and would presumably be leaders in such an analysis center. And it would give the laboratories an opportunity to expand in those areas. It's particularly when they're thinking about what their future should be. It seems to me that analysis centers are a very natural thing to have at laboratories, and having a strong theory component. And when I say strong theory component, I mean some number of in-house people, but mainly to have outside university people who are affiliates of those centers who routinely go there, spend time, and work there. I think that a flavor physics center, most people here are QCD people, but I think a flavor physics center is needed of some sort in the U.S. There have been ideas of a proposal to the NSF to have some university site for such a center where you could do, you know, neutrinos, muons, B physics, kaon physics, etc. I'm not sure whether you need a whole center or maybe you need a place like this to play a role in helping that organization, but that's an idea, I think, for the flavor people, because there's a sort of something's lacking there. And the third idea is the model in the laboratories that has always appealed to me is the Slack Summer Institute model, where I think that there is nice interaction between young experimentalists, theory lecturers, the people at the laboratory who go to hear those lectures, and I think maybe other laboratories can follow that model. But that's always appealed to me as something that seems to work very well. Now, in the case of the joint particle experimental theory seminar, well, at a lab, of course, you always have these things. At Brookhaven, we have one that I would say is moderately successful. I think it's the experimentalists who tend to take advantage of it, frankly. And I think that's a problem with the experimental culture, where many people on a given experiment are focused on some piece of hardware and don't really pay enough attention to what's going on in the physics community. And they could probably benefit more even than the theorists who attend such a a seminar. I think students and postdocs can benefit from such things just to get a feel for what's happening. As an incentive, of course, you have to have good speakers instead of just someone who asked to come and give a talk or someone who's talking about something really technical. Of course, it helps to provide coffee and cookies and, or even better, wine and cheese, as they do at Fermilab. I think luncheon seminars are a good place for that also, where people can try out new ideas. And again, if the experimentalists are willing to listen, I find experimentalists aren't usually willing to get involved in anything other than what they're working on. In the case of students, there's this tradition. I think Slack has had a very rich tradition with students because of the affiliation with the university. At Brookhaven, we never really had much in the way of student interaction, and I think at Fermilab there's not been that much student interaction. I think students could really do well at such a place as a national laboratory, and maybe summer programs for visits are the way to do that, and maybe more supervision. Although Joe mentioned that, you know, we're not at labs to teach, otherwise we'd be at universities. Many universities don't have people now doing phenomenology, and I think if a student is interested in some area that's not covered by their home university, laboratories should somehow provide an environment for those people. The courses, again, I don't think year-long courses work so well. There are enough summer schools probably to take care of that. In terms of working groups, what I find works best are smaller working groups with one or two theorists and four or five experimentalists working on a very focused problem that they're all interested in, and meeting, let's say, regularly on a weekly basis. We've done that with neutrinos, and it's worked very well. Just having a working group where anybody attends and most people don't do any work after they leave, it seems to me, doesn't really lead to much. So those are my comments.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. I would like to give a kind of a UK perspective to this debate. It's interesting that, let's say, 10 years ago, phenomenology in the UK was very much the poor relation. You had a few people. You had Brian Weber and Sandy Donaghy, Alan Martin, and that was really it. And it's amazing if you look at the situation now in the UK, where phenomenology is really the mainstream activity on the theory side. And in terms of numbers, we have as many people doing phenomenology in the UK as we have doing lattice and what one might call more formal theory. And furthermore, you look now at various institutes like Edinburgh, Glasgow, Southampton, Manchester, and of course Durham, who have built up very sizable phenomenology groups. And most of the lectureships that are advertised in the UK these days are in phenomenology. Of course, the second thing, so the whole thing has turned around in the UK in recent years, and I think, why has that happened? I think it's because the drive came from the experimental community, who felt that they were going to be left behind in the LHC and linear collider era unless they built up a national expertise, national experience with data analysis and interaction with theorists. And so the funding agency were convinced by the arguments that phenomenology had to be built up and that more theorists in the UK had to be diverted into this area of interacting more closely with experimentalists. Now, the second radical thing that happened in the UK, as many of you will know, is that the funding agency, PPARC, 4 years ago created an institute for phenomenology, which is based at Durham. And the remit of the institute was two things. Partly it was to build up this volume of phenomenology activity in the UK, and partly it was to serve as a national facility to coordinate and to encourage and to make possible interaction between UK theorists and UK experimentalists. We've been going for 3.5 years now. We've organized something 40 to 50 different types of phenomenology activity, ranging from big conferences, very small workshops, summer schools, and so on. So what have we learned? I think we've done okay in Durham, but we started out with a blank sheet of paper, which was basically improve interaction between theorists and experimentalists in the UK. So what have we learned? We've done okay, but just a few comments, which I think are relevant to the discussion that we're having this afternoon. some of the lessons we've learned are that if you want to encourage theorists and experimentalists to work together, there has to be something in it for both sides. Experimentalists just can't say to theorists, I need that calculation, devote the next 3 years of your life to doing it, and then come back, and you might get a footnote in the paper, or you might not. On the other hand, theorists can't expect experimentalists to waste valuable time going looking or looking for things or considering things in their experiment that are never going to be seen or impossible to dig out. So there has to be something in it for both. The second comment is that the community here at this workshop, I think we're preaching a little bit to the converted, because I think of all the areas of particle physics, it's the collider phenomenologists over the last 5-10 years have demonstrated the closest interaction between theory and experiment, which is something that Ian said. We've seen this, we compare this to other areas like, for example, neutrino physics, astroparticle physics, maybe even the lattice, where they're, I think, just beginning to build up the kind of close relationships that we have in our own community of collider physics. So that when we come to a meeting like this, to an institute like this, we hit the ground running because we're familiar with each other, we're comfortable with each other, we've been many kids working together for many, many years, and so it's easy for us to do it. So I think we can be proud of the fact that we have built up this culture in collider physics, going right back to the CERN-PBRP collider, the LEP, HERA, and currently the LHC. So it's something we can be proud of, and I think we're doing a lot better in this than in other areas of particle physics. What sort of interaction have we found works best? As has been already mentioned, while the idea of getting everybody together, the top 50 experimentalists and the top 50 theorists, getting them together for a year, that's just complete pie in the sky. It's a lovely idea, it just doesn't work. People are incredibly busy, especially on the experimental side, and if you can grab an experimentalist, it's difficult to grab them for a day or two before they say, sorry, I've got to go back to the lab because my bit of the detector needs attention or whatever. So we have found that while big activities are useful for perhaps trying to survey a scene, you get people together, like this week's conference, excellent for surveying where we are in collider physics, what has been done in the last few years, what needs to be done in the next few years. But if you want to actually get work done, in our experience, the thing that is most effective, I think, are getting a small group of people together, a small number of theorists and experimentalists. It could be 5 theorists, 5 experimentalists, or something like that, 10, 10. A small number of people, and getting them to think over a long time period about some specific focused topic. Now, we've had examples of that was someone today referred to the Durham and the Fermi Lab, the Monte Carlo workshops that are now sort of an ongoing thing that Joey and Steve Morena and Peter Richardson, John Butterworth have established, where, it's a small community, there's maybe 10, 20 people there, but they are, from looking at it from the outside, making real progress in the business of developing Monte Carlos, tuning them, validating them, and so on. There are other examples of activity like that. We're building up little pockets of expertise in neutrino physics in the UK. There's now a growing community interested in things like neutrinoless double beta decay, theorists and experimentalists. It's maybe only 5 or 10 people, but they get together, they establish a working relation, and then they set the timescale. They may want to meet together once every 6 months, once every 12 months, or they may just want to communicate by email or whatever. So I think these meetings like this are great for surveying the scene and exposing the problems and getting people in contact with each other. They can meet, they can exchange ideas, and then they can go away and work together over the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years in smaller groups. And then we can come back in a few years' time and survey what progress has been made. The other sort of anomaly that we have in Durham is that for a phenomenology institute, it's surprising to many people, we don't actually have an in-house experimental group. And this was one of the barriers we had to overcome when we were trying to get the institute in Durham. We were competing with all the competitor institutions had in-house experimental groups. And I think I argued at the time that wasn't a barrier to a successful institute, and I believe that even more now, because it means that, two things. If we had in-house experimentalists, we would be, I think, naturally biased towards being interested in sort of things they were doing. But it means that we have to go out and be proactive in developing contacts with experimentalists. And one of the things we did very early on was to establish with each experiment in which the UK is interested, a liaison person from the experiment who comes to Durham and tells us what they're trying to do and tells us, most importantly, what the problems they have, what theory input they would like. Now, probably 7, 8, 9 times out of 10, we can't provide that from within our own institute because there just aren't enough of us. But what we can do is try and facilitate, say, well, yeah, we can't help you with that, but we know somebody else who can, or why don't we have a little workshop and we'll bring together the people that we think can help help solve your problems. So again, it all comes back to this idea of small focused groups of people making progress on particular topics. Just Roberto's questions, just quickly some comments on those. Students, yeah, I think something I think is we are going to do a lot more of in the UK is this idea of having graduate students supervised, co-supervised by theorists and experimentalists. I've seen, we haven't had that in Durham, but I've seen examples in, I know a couple of examples in Manchester where it seems to have worked really well. Of course, there's always a lead supervisor that the student is hired as either an experimentalist or hired is put on the books either as an experimentalist or a theorist, but in effect ends up having two supervisors. And I know from speaking to colleagues in particular in Manchester that works really well. So this might be something that, you know, can be explored. We will be exploring it in Durham, and I think it's something that is likely to work well, especially in this build-up to the LHC period. One final comment, and that is that we have found that our interaction with experimentalists works best when we establish a relationship of trust with them. Now, the example of that, and a classic example of that is working with HERA experimentalists over the years, where the trust was such that they would let us see their data before it became, what do you call it, stamped, blessed, approved, finalized, published. And I think that was mutually beneficial. They were able to come to us and say, look, we're beginning to make this particular measurement and maybe it looks a bit odd or we don't understand why it has this particular shape. And we, in many cases, were able to look at it and help them and try and help them understand what was going on. Now, there was an unwritten rule that, of course, the thing we wouldn't do would be to grab their data, write a paper saying discovery of the leptoquark or whatever, with the theorist's name on it. So, but that was understood. And as long as that was the case, they were happy to let us see it, and we benefited from being able to anticipate what the measurements were going to be when they were published. So maybe this is a small thing, but it's an important thing that might be able to be taken on board with the looking forward to the LHC. But of course you have to respect your confidentiality within your collaboration, and of course it doesn't get any easier if you've got a competitor experiment just around the ring. But our experience was that we could get H1 and Zeus people into the same room, and they were happy to display their, what do we call it, dirty washing to each other, and there weren't really any problems. Okay, thank you.
So as you probably can imagine, they have nothing left to say for me, almost nothing. So let me start with something completely different, and maybe in the name of all the experimentalists here, I was thinking I should really congratulate all you theorists for this recent crazy and impressive higher order calculations. I mean, I'm extremely impressed by this progress in the last years, especially since in the second half of the 90s, several times at CERN I went to Stefano Cattani and asked him, when will you give me the NMLO calculation for E plus E minus in 3 jets? And in the beginning he always looked at me and said, more or less, forget it. And now it's practically here. So I've been extremely impressed now these recent days. So I hope this is stimulation enough for you to work with me now. One other concrete way of stimulating collaboration, I think I can speak here for CMS. There is an agreement now in CMS that, as I told you also in my talk, we are going towards the preparation of the physics TDR. This will be one big document where really very detailed simulation studies will be described how we will do physics at CMS, and CMS really invites phenomenologists to come to the CMS physics meetings and to collaborate in these preparations of physics analysis. And the agreement is that whatever notes and publications come out during these 1 or 2 years, there will be joint authors, experimentalists from CMS and the theorists involved in this work. So there will be somehow joint publications. The final document will be only signed by CMS physicists for some political reasons, but the work towards it, the real publications, should be joint efforts. So I think this, I hope that this is a good stimulation for a new work, way of working together. Now, another way of improving maybe is really that the organizers of summer schools all over the world maybe should rethink a little bit how they organize their summer schools. I think there are always very good talks from the theory side, maybe there are very good talks from the experimental side, but maybe one thing is missing, that more people, more of those people are invited who stay somehow in the middle. And maybe one can enforce this, that there are more often really lectures on how this connection, pure experiment and pure theory is done. I mean, this is, I mean, I don't have maybe concrete proposal, but one should start to think about some new organization of these schools. Now, in general, my impression, at least during these last years, was one problem is simply a problem of culture, a problem of willingness to listen to the others. I mean, I know a lot of experimentalists, whenever they look to, or when they see a talk, theory talk, and the first formula is longer than 2 lines, then they switch off and say, no, that's too complicated for me, or that's not interesting for me, and vice versa. And this culture has to be changed. And one way to change this is by giving another kind of education to the young people. And this will be done in the summer schools and winter schools and so on, I think. Of course, there are a few exceptions, but I think there are not many people around who really stay very well in the middle, I mean, between the phenomenology side and the experimentalist side. I don't think maybe these few people are actually here at this workshop, but there are not more many really experimentalists around here, so maybe one could enforce this. Now, in Zurich, maybe we should admit, Zoltan, that there are seminars, but the collaboration could definitely be better, and since now Thomas is also in Zurich at the university, maybe we should think about a little bit more how we can enforce combined seminars and so on. There's one concrete problem in Zurich, and maybe this is true for any kind of institute which is very near to a, very close to a big lab. Almost all of our experimentalists stay all the time at CERN, and so they are never at the seminars at the institute. And this is a big problem, so of course the theorists will always stay alone. So I don't know really how to solve this problem, especially now in the coming years when the construction is getting more important. Nevertheless, for the lecturing, there are some attempts to combine theory and experiment. I think Felicitas and Michael Spier are giving, are sharing the lectures, as Sigi said, as apparently he's doing, so there are similar attempts there, and maybe one can think of improving this. Now, regarding workshops and so on, was basically said already. I can report from one big good experience we had recently. Michael Dittmar and myself, we organized a very small workshop last autumn, and the idea was to have first of all a small group of maybe half-half experimental theorists, a very more or less well-formulated topic, so not the general thing, general collider physics problem, but one concrete topic in an isolated place. I mean, it was a mountain village, really no internet, nothing, and only for 3 days. It should also not be too long. And this recipe actually seemed to have worked out very well. And what we tried to do also is we tried to also send our youngest students there. In fact, this is how to reduce this fear, as you said, to talk to the big guys, let's say. And in this way, I think this is the way maybe to go, and we will repeat this, definitely. So I think this is, in fact, this workshop, they really should concentrate on one topic. There should not be too many people, and it should not be the usual series of review talks. I mean, it should not said to everybody or said things what everybody knows already, which sometimes happen. So, as I said, most of the other things have been said before.
Okay, I guess we should open everybody else. I wanted to make one comment which really began with Ian, but sort of permeated in the discussion here. And that is, there doesn't seem to be any problem in collaborating between theorists and experimentalists in areas where the theorists do hard calculations that are actually related to experiment. There is a big gap of theorists that just are up in funny number of dimensions, but there's also a fairly large gap with sort of a fly-by-night beyond the standard model, people who are not really serious enough because their ideas really are, you know, like mayflies. Okay, they exist for a little while and then they forget it and they move on to something else, and that's much harder. I mean, if you look at here we're talking about Collider folks, but if you look in the flavor sector, there are certainly people that are working very closely together with experimentalists. They're looking at, you know, various things, but it is sort of the theory of the day, which I would like you to spend the next 20 years testing, and then next week you forgot about it. you do not get a resonance. So I like to at least see whether that impression was a fair impression. That is, I mean, because in fact here, as James says, you guys work very well together. So it's really preaching in a way to the choir. But is this a reasonable point?
It's a very important point. And I think you're almost unique. You're very different, you're a phenomenologist, than what we call phenomenologists in the US. In the sense, if you look at the center of gravity of your phenomenologists, they're standard model people. If you look at the center of gravity of the non-string theory people, they're only just in four dimensions in the US. I mean, they're further away. And I think that's why you found it easier. And the experimentalists have been more willing to interact with you than it happens in the U.S.
And it's quite clear that, you know, as LHC turns out, indeed, there may be all sort of stuff that we don't have any idea. So you do have to work on this odd stuff. But you also have to realize that you can't just BS that this is absolutely, you believe it forever, okay? I mean, you know, they're really ideas. So you're holding... Oh, you're just holding. All right.
I actually wanted to address what that very point that you brought up. And this is always brought home to me when, for instance, certain more theoretical colleagues of mine discuss this phenomenologist or that phenomenologist, and I always have to be careful because I find out they're talking about Nima Arkani Hamed. And what we're failing to see sometimes is that the spectrum is much more broadly drawn. And you, in your initial remarks, you wanted to talk about how to get theorists to talk about experimentalists, how to talk with experimentalists, and how to get more collaborations. But I think, given the structure of our field today, one of the most important things to think about is how to get our model builders to talk to our simulators, for instance. In other words, take as Ian put it, at the edge of four-dimensional space, the theorist coming up with the theory of the day that they might forget later on. I don't think it's as bad as that. I mean, just to give an example, although I'm not an incredible fan of Little Higgs, the one thing that's happened in electroweak symmetry breaking in the last 5 years is to realize that how little we know about the origin of electroweak symmetry breaking. And in fact, there may be other ideas out there. And of course, everyone might have their pet model. but there's sort of a synthesis that still awaits to be made in this regard, and it's not going to be solved until our experimentalist friends do something about this. But to get to that point, we're going to need a conversation between that community that's generating a lot of these ideas and a lot of these models and the more phenomenologically oriented theorists who think very carefully about how to compute things that and turn them into cross sections and observables. So I would like to add to your charge to figure out mechanisms by which we can take these two communities of theorists and get them to be speaking to each other more.
People do not speak enough about the physics. I mean, really, that's what you really want to know what you're going to get out of it. Yeah. Let's see, Jack and then Zoltan. I guess I'm only looking that way. And then,
well, I just wanted to say what I had found to be successful in the past among the things that you mentioned. And Joe talked about the Run to SUSE workshops, and I thought actually those worked very well because they did bring together a core of experimentalists and a core of theorists together in the same room, and we really did get some work done. You know, theorists would suggest a few crazy ideas, not so crazy, of course, but and the experimentalists would actually help to work out the signals, and you know, various contributions to the proceedings were developed as a result of these interactions. So my only issue with those was that I didn't feel like there were enough model builders that came to those meetings, and I don't know exactly how we encouraged that. There were some, but just not, there could have been more. And also I didn't feel like junior people and graduate students were able to come to those simply because of monetary considerations. So there needs to be, I think, I would encourage more of those kinds of workshops, say at the Tevatron Fermilab environment, CMS at Fermilab, but with a little bit more emphasis on bringing more model builders and bringing more junior people and graduate students by increasing the amount of funding. I think the short-term repetition idea, 3 days, 1 month, 3 days, 2 months later with continuing projects and email communications in between, that's something that's practical and did work in that occasion. In Europe, I think of the Lazouche meetings, those are sort of only bi-yearly or something like that, but those are typically quite successful and they do bring in some junior people and people really do sit down and work together and try to get something done, both experimentalists and theorists together. So those two things, that kind of mechanism does seem to work to me, and I think, as I say, the one thing that's missing in both of those cases is getting a little bit more of the real model builders into the action, because the people who had tended to come to those workshops were a little bit not so much in the far out model building space. So just a slightly broader spectrum I think would really help there.
I would like to make just a very little comment concerning our meeting, that we are in the middle of our meeting yet. And if you look at the second half of the meeting, then we change a little bit the topic and we go to the model building direction. And actually that is, and this meeting is a starting conference, but we are not a workshop. And we actually have this attempt to broaden the community. So we have model builders in our program. We also have Lattice people coming in the program. So actually, there is also, we realize that there is such a need. So we, from the experimentalist up to the model builder, we have represented during this workshop. The other comment I would like to make is that, supporting what also Holly said, that I personally benefited enormously from the CERN workshops I've been organizing the last year. So they've been excellently organized. The interaction with a large number of experimentalists. So, of course, when LEC will come, then I believe that we will see again that. And that is also a crucial part of this interaction with CERN.
We since Jack sort of gave his own perspective on his experience how to work with experimentalists, let me just chip in and say something how it started out with me. I think I'm one of the veterans of theorists working with the Fermilab experiments for more than 10 years now. And what worked for me was I just went to the CDFND0 trailers and got lost there talking to people. And that way, I think the experimentalists learned something, and I learned a lot about the experiments. And I think a lot of the questions and a number of interesting calculations were done as a result of those interactions. And over the years, I think this has evolved in the sense that I'm considering myself now almost like a theorist embedded, right? Or an embedded theorist in terms of, well, you know what I'm referring to. The point is, I think what, and this comes back to what other people have said, especially James, working in small groups. So there's an analysis group, say in CDF doing a particular analysis, or in D0, it doesn't matter. And we get together every once in a while, and they show me their results, they show me their plots, they ask questions, and I ask questions. And I think, you know, from that point of view, there's both sides benefit a lot. And now this has evolved, in particular for the W mass analysis, into, you know, the Tevatron Electroweak Working Group. And now we have meetings, and more theorists are coming in. And they're very focused questions, and they're very interesting problems coming up. And I think, you know, that's really the way to proceed, in small groups focused on particular problems. And then that way you can actually bring in more people if you need, and make progress.
So I just wanted to make some comments about this institution, whose role it is to, in theoretical physics, very broadly defined, bring people together for meetings like this, of which this conference is just the beginning of a three-month program. And my experience, since I've been here about 7 years now, and in particle physics, so when I came, I'd noticed that, you know, we had very little particle physics happening here. And a lot of string theory, field theory, a lot of condensed matter. Very little particle physics in the traditional sense. To some extent, that was because we are a user's facility, and to a large extent. And although we do encourage programs, and most of what happens here happens as a consequence of the community at large showing interest and getting together and organizing and running the programs, and certainly at the beginning proposing programs. And there were almost no proposals from the particle physics community. That by and large has continued to today. Most of the I did try very hard to change this, and with the help of people on the board, and we have managed. Indeed, this is one example. Neutrino physics, we had a very successful program last year. We do lattice gauge theory in a year from now. For more traditional non-string theory, say particle physics programs. But it's been, to some extent, very difficult, because in condensed matter physics, every year we get dozens and dozens of wonderful proposals. In particle physics, we get, well, here is now a member of our board, in fact, chairing the subcommittee on high energy particle physics. And he can tell you how many proposals we get from this vibrant theoretical community. And, you know, I complain about this to a lot of people. It doesn't do any good. And I don't know how to interpret that, but it's certainly, from our point of view, a wasted opportunity to do exactly what you said about how we also have some experience with this and try to get into. I don't know what it is. To some extent, it's because there are opportunities at national labs and other places to run workshops, but KITP workshops are a little different, and I think it's sort of a wasted opportunity, and certainly a wasted opportunity for what you were saying, in trying to bring together theorists across the spectrum, something this program is indeed trying to do, and hopefully it'll work. So anyway, I just wanted to voice that and describe what's going on at the moment, and remind you all that the opportunity exists. We await good proposals, good ideas. We now have something called pre-proposals, which means you can just send in a sentence. Won't be considered very seriously, but you can do it. And you know, Joe will be glad to hear about your ideas. We have a meeting in 3 weeks where we will be deciding on programs for 2005-2006. Given what we have already, it looks like it's going to be strings again. And to some extent, I measure vitality of different fields in physics by the response of the community. This is not a good sign. We also have a new thing that is beginning and might be of interest to this community sometime later, as LHC does turn on, and that is a rapid response program. With the help of some of the money we've raised, hopefully we will be able to start the ability to run a short mini workshop, say 30 people for 3 weeks, something like that, within a maximal 6-month time period or less. 6 months is a maximum, maybe 3 months. Something happens, dramatically exciting, really make a push forward, get people together, not as a little conference or a 2-day meeting, but as a place where, like, workshops are supposed to be here, where people really come together, have time to form new collaborations, start research, really think, get something done on a short time basis. So that's another possibility that will come along and be there, hopefully, when LHC starts running, and there'll be a need for such rapid response to the exciting news.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on something that I think the last one that talked about the subject was Jack. And I think that it's true that we have had these Higgs and Susi and B-physics workshops, for example, at Fermilab, where the connection between theory and experiment maybe was not optimal, but I think was much better than before. However, one thing I found out, especially coming from Europe, is that at least for what has to do with physics beyond the standard model, experimentalists in the United States are much more reluctant to interact with theorists and to especially encourage their young students and young postdocs to put real time in exploring some possibility besides the work that they are doing for their core PhD or core postdoc analysis. And I think that, I don't know why that is that way, but there is a big difference between the two communities, I think. Especially being at Fermilab, one sees that, for example, in our joint theory experimental seminar, we have most of the theorists going, we have many experimentalists going. I think we don't have enough postdocs and students attending our joint seminar, mainly because what I hear when I ask why they do that, why they don't come, they say because we are told by our more senior people that we should be doing what we are doing and not diverting our attention and listening other things. So I think that may be the origin a bit of the problem. I don't know, but maybe one can try here in this community, in this mixed community of junior and senior people, to try to address this problem, because I think it's going to be the same when the Tevatron analysis or LHC era comes. At least a Fermilab is obvious.
Yeah, I have a trio of somewhat provocative, or at least I'll phrase them a little bit provocative, proposals. First one is to improve the quality of ambulance chasing, which was something that at least I always felt that the American theorist liked to do. And that's to go to the opposite of the limit that James was with experimental data, and basically to take old experimental data and open it up almost as a free-for-all. And that will give theorists an opportunity to go around rooting, hoping to find something. Most likely they won't, but at least they'll gain familiarity and they'll gain an interest in working with data. This is... how about run one data from the Tevatron? This is something which, you see, I hadn't even managed to finish the paragraph, and there's already anguished response. And this is something which is mandated in the astronomy. The NSF mandates that after a we'll invite some astronomers to eat you for lunch tomorrow. I think that this is a sociological issue, and it's a historical convention in particle physics, and I think that it would be healthy, actually, for the future if there were more of a tradition to open up data after a certain amount of time when the experiments had exclusivity. I think it would also force the experiments to organize their data in a better way. Anyway, this is a suggestion that I think would... I haven't finished my firecrackers. So the second thing was maybe not quite to the extent of having co-advisors, but I think it would be a good idea to encourage experimental students to spend a certain amount of time working with theorists. Currently, experimental students are in the situation that if they're working on LHC, it's going to be a long time before there's actually any data for them to deal with. In fact, for Europeans, at least, it's going to be beyond the limit of their PhD. This will give them an opportunity to learn how to use some of the codes that are going to be relevant to LHC analysis. And for the theorists, this is, I guess, the provocative part, it will provide them with some labor for doing some things that they otherwise might decide is not really their highest priority. The third suggestion is, and again, there may be summer schools that are more run this way. I'm familiar particularly with the Lazouche one, which is a very traditional sort of lecture format. I think it would be a good idea for summer school projects to be instituted, where people actually, you know, maybe theory and experimental students would work together on some little bit of data analysis to the extent that you can actually do anything in the context of a two-week or a three-week school. And there'd be... So it would be a project-oriented rather than a series of lectures from theorists and experimenters.
Yes, actually the request of opening up the old high-energy physics data is not new. It has been asked several times, and it's always denied by the experimentalists. But I think, now I'm an experimentalist, but I think it would be a good idea, because what it would prevent experimental data from vanishing in nowhere, and that is what happens at the moment. I experienced that with the Petra data. Nobody kept been working on that. The experimenters were on lab or other nice experiments, and so after 5 years, one thing happens that you cannot read the old tapes. Right, so you need some people to restore the tapes on modern data carriers. But that's not everything. You need a lot of software to read and also analyze these data. So I think it's more complicated than in the astronomy case, much more complicated. But if theorists and experimentalists would sit together and work out a viable program and an interface, defining a clear interface, where the data should be and how they should be interpreted, I think it could be done. It requires manpower. I don't know, maybe the big labs have to set aside 5 people who take care about this, not only copying tapes over and over to something else every 5 years, but you have to do something about the software, because when we went back to the Petra data and we needed all the software, we had the Fortran code, but it did not compile on any machine in the world anymore. Right? So it was several years of work to rewrite set or write interfaces for this old code. It was a Fortran G compiler with lots of specifications. And that is a pain in the neck, and that has to be done by people. But on the other hand, if there are people who need, who use this data then from time to time, that would prevent, that would keep up the system, I think. If there's a, if there's an interest, then the data would not be lost. At the moment, I think it's almost a crime to the taxpayers that after 5, latest after 10 years, these data are completely useless and can be thrown away because nobody can analyze them. And I think that, that is really more than a pity, it's almost a crime. And it could maybe prevent that when the data would be open and if there's a common system and an agreed system, how they can be used.
Yes, I'm sorry, on the same topic, I, you know, the, a few years ago there was a Freedom of Information Act that came in the government and they said, give all the data away, open it up and that's fine, you know, and we were getting at Fermilab requests to give, you know, all the top data samples to people in the community to analyze and so on. That's fine and it's good for us to have the data, but the problem was, the problem is technology, how to keep the data. And then when I was talking to some people from the government and I said, we really need to have our data, I was having this panic attack, we really need to have the data from 5 years ago and 10 years ago and from Slack and from, you know, CDF run one, CDF run zero. If you take even CDF run 1B now, if you want to find data samples that you can look, it's very difficult to look. And the people in the government, they said, well, this is why you write papers, and we believe the papers that you write when you are having the data that they're correct. So the form of the data that we want kept is your results, so you better make sure when you have them. The data has a value when they, when it's been taken. For example, it was calculated in round one, each event was $9 if you take everything. And when you publish, and when you publish your paper, this is where the value of the data is, and then you should better spend your money and your resources into storing the LHC data and you designing the DAQ for LHC and into getting massive more data. So it is difficult, you are right. I would like, I'm carrying the tapes of my thesis from CDF with me, and I don't know, you know, I'm going to carry them forever, I suppose, but I, there's no machine that I can put this tape in, you know what I mean? And I can get the data out. It's not, so.
Yeah, this is just a quick follow-up on this. I think someone in D0 was trying to do that, Bruce Knudsen, and the Squero system. And so at least a subset of the Run 1 data, I think, from D0 is available. I don't know if someone from D0 is here and can comment on that. That's also true, yes. I don't know if someone from D0 is here, maybe he or she can comment.
Now I can speak for Aleph, since we have been thinking really a lot of how to archive our data. But first of all, you have to answer the question, what do you mean by data? I mean, do you want the four vectors? Do you want the bulge shapes of a channel in the vertex detector? So this is the first problem you have to attack. Then Bruce, for example, Bruce also was infected CERN, and there were big resistances to this approach because the people are very much afraid that when people start to look at the data, they really don't understand all the detailed problems which are there. And if you try to have a gross look at the data, there are big dangers that you get the fake whatever results. So one approach we have in Aleph now is we had somebody who took a lot of his time. We bought a lot of laptop systems. We decided to freeze this somehow, so the software and the data of Aleph have been frozen at some stage, and they are installed on these laptop systems. Plus, we have all the data on little disks now, because you're able to store the lab data on a small disk, by the way. And well, if you're from an institute which was in Aleph, you can ask for such a system. You get a laptop, and I will get one, and I will have it in my desk, on my desk somewhere. And at some stage, it will be possible for people to analyze data, Aleph data, and write publications. So whenever you are interested to look at something, also as a theorist, you can come to me and we can have a look at it. But this is one way of solving it, as we try to solve it in Aleph.
Okay.
German institutions joining D0 in a very late stage, of course, because people realize that.
What I'm trying to say is I don't think it's a movie. There isn't a motivation to have the experiment to see if I'm making a movie.
Back there. So.
So this is a little bit of a response to David's comments. I once had this idea that I actually proposed to NSF that maybe, well, they didn't fund it, but maybe David would want to consider it. It's a different kind of rapid response than the one that he mentioned. It's sort of a rapid response to a new theoretical idea that I think would maybe be worth trying. Let's take the little Higgs as an example. There were some model builders working on this, very interesting ideas. It's taking quite a while for this to filter down to the rest of the theorists and to the experimental community. My idea was that maybe there should be an institute that has a rapid response to a new theoretical idea, brings people together that would be interested in facilitating this feed down process to the experimental level, you know, people who are a little bit more phenomenological than the model builders, and then some experimentalists who would be willing to put it through some simulations and see how well it all works. And, you know, these would be sort of a short-term kind of program with maybe a follow-up week later on or something like that.
Let me just add another comment in response to what David said. This since I everyone's assembled here, I think it's worth making this comment as well. David made the point that there are very few particle physics workshops being proposed here, and this seems to be somehow inbred in the culture of particle physics, and I don't understand it as well. And I'll give you one other example, because I'll put on my hat now as the program chair of the Aspen Center for Physics. And I can tell you that the way particle theory workshops get done at Aspen is that at the end of June we say, oh my God, no one's proposed anything, and the program chair has to go running out and trying to grab people. The Aspen Center of Physics presents also a unique, a different type of opportunity, but unique nonetheless for getting together disparate groups within particle theory. And since I have everyone here, let me just say, send me some email before July 1. One sentence is enough to start the conversation.
Let me make a comment. Let me make a comment that this, incidentally, is a very bad sign for the community. Okay, because particle physicists are out there. They're out in the clouds. If you look at the rest of science, they are much more aggressive. You know, our glory days are wonderful, and maybe we'll have more glory days, but it isn't going to happen as time translation unless you really worry about it. Okay? And, you know, not proposing things because we're so smart and it doesn't make any difference, you know. You know, the string theory is at least they know that they're doing something else and that they do need to congregate. But in fact, it is, I think, a bad sign for the community that we're way too focused on very long-term projects, which we need to be, and not enough at publicizing some of the things that we do. So it is, in my view, it's a dangerous sign. Yes, Marcela. You can have the last word.
I just wanted to make the last comment referring to this idea of LHC theory center of centers, which you know, I think the idea was basically very much in what Jack was saying, that we have different communities, and also what Howie was emphasizing, that we have very different communities, and we have a model builder community which comes with very daring ideas, and sometimes not very long lasting, but still very daring and interesting. And then we have some more phenomenological oriented theorists in the middle, and then we have some people that actually are able to put things in, you know, type of Monte Carlo programs and do the bridge with experiment. And that was the idea of this theory, LHC Theory Center, to have these three communities of theorists. Most probably the third one would be associated to one of the collaborations, CMS or Atlas, to make things work, really. And I thought that it was the possibility, of course, to think about one of these centers at Fermilab, because Fermilab is the CMS Atlas Physics Center, and that's what I talked with Sally and with Ian, actually, for what would be some combination of the Atlas Physics Center. And I still think this could be a very good idea for us theorists to push in a way that would be a theory center with one or more locations, and where we are basically a user-friendly theory center, where anyone with a real interest in different levels in LHC physics can go and interact and push their ideas through. And I would like that, you know, this crowd of people think about that seriously. Thank you.
I don't know if anybody in the panel wants to say any more comments. What? Where's the bar? Well, I think the bar is in that general direction. Okay, thanks very much to everybody.